You're listening to the Ambit Energy Podcast with Field Recognition Specialist Wayne McMullen.
And welcome to the podcast. Well, this week we rejoin our Chief Marketing Officer and co-founder Chris Chambliss for part two of his speech from Ambition 2014. Just to recap where we left Chris, he was speaking about journeys of discovery and its impact on you as consultants. Well, that's enough from me. Let's hear the exciting and poignant conclusion from Chris Chambliss.
And then you got the weather, which can turn dark, pitch black at noon, and drench the whole horizon, causing life-threatening flash floods. And so that land is the land that Richard Francis Burton and John Hanning Speke were recruited to enter with the task of proving Britain's place as the greatest empire on earth. There they are. The hope of the British Empire. Now, their plan was to take an old slaver's path. It was about, 745 miles through what's now the city of Tabora on the savannah, and then on into Ujiji, which is on the shore of Lake Tanganyika, which was a lake that no white man at that point had ever seen before, and one of the places that was rumored to be the source of the Nile. So that was their path. And the expedition's caravan consisted of about 100 human porters and only a small number of pack animals, and that's because that one of the worst things in Africa was this little brown tsetse fly that carried a deadly sleeping sickness and was attracted to horses and donkeys. So really what they had to do is human beings had to carry everything into the this expedition. So there's hundreds of men carrying sacks on their back every day. And so if you think about it, they had to get up and rise well before dawn, and then they just continued every day until the heat literally made them stop. They couldn't physically do it anymore. And so after that, so you think about it, maybe they made 5 to 10 miles a day. So every day they stop, and then after they rest for a little bit, they've got to build these protective fencings called bomas around the campsite. So every day from scratch, the boma would be put together by these like thorny branches, and it would keep out the lions and the hyenas, okay, which, you know, aren't a great thing to have interrupt your sleep. But it didn't keep out any of the serpents. So you got the puff adder, you had the black and the green mamba, you got the boom slang, you got the gabon viper, and you got a dozen different kinds of cobras. And the other thing it didn't keep out was the colonies of army ants that were rampant through there. And they were known to devour people in their sleep. Now, at least the army ants, I have to say in their defense, they did provide some level of service, because if you were out there on an expedition and you got a really bad cut, they didn't have to sew it up. You didn't need needle or thread. What they would do is they would go get the army ants and they would place them on the cut. And their mandibles were so big that when they bit down, they would close the wound, and then they'd just pull the body off the head and they would suture up the wound with army ant bites. Yeah, I know, right? I mean, think about that. You're out there and you get cut, and your solution is go find some army ants. So, but at the end of the day, maybe 4 weeks in, both these guys get malaria. And so their heads ache, their joints are stiff, they were throwing up. I mean, their skin's turning yellow, they're shivering uncontrollably. And on top of that, they've got these very swollen spleens who make it almost impossible to sit on a horse or to walk because of your back. And then they also make every nick or cut turn into an infection. And so that kind of slowed their progress a little bit. But it was the second battle malaria that nearly did them in. So they get over one, boom, get another one. And if they hadn't gotten to Tabora, I think it might have done them in. But on November 7th, 1857, after 5 months exactly of setting out on this journey, they arrived at Tabora, having gone 600 miles in 134 days with two bouts of malaria. And so once they're in Tabora, Burton, who's fluent in Arabic, talks to some of the locals and gleans some information about where they're at and what's going on. And he learns that there's this powerful river that is flowing out of a large lake that's a couple hundred miles north of Tabora, and then there's another lake about 200 miles due west toward their original destination at Ujiji. And so at this point, these guys have a disagreement. Burton wants to continue on to UGG and check out that lake. Speke wants to go north to the one that is supposed to have this powerful river running out of it. Burton's in charge. He decides. And at the same time, he becomes deathly ill with yet another, they don't even name them. There's so many of them, they don't even have names. They just call it sleeping sickness. Now, he couldn't walk or even stand at this point. And in fact, he wouldn't even be able to walk unsupported for over a year after that. And so I think Speke's thinking, I mean, this condition's getting worse. He may die. His hands and feet started to feel like they were engulfed in flames. And I think he started to figure out that Speke thought he might die. And so he just kind of summoned up what can only be described as superhuman courage. And he decided that they are going to move forward to UGG, and he ordered the expedition to leave Tabora and make out. And so literally they fashioned a litter for this guy and hired six porters to carry him from Tabora to UGG. Now, Speke wasn't unscathed either. He developed this condition called, it creates temporary blindness. It's called omphalia. And so by the time he and Burton found themselves perched on top of two donkeys looking out from a little mountaintop down onto a valley, he couldn't even see this little shiny silver thing way down below in the valley. So it was Burton who was the first European to actually see Lake Tanganyika. And he immediately realized that this thing was so enormous, you couldn't even see both north and south shores at the same time. And somehow or another, the emotional significance of that just overwhelmed him. And he wrote in his journal, nothing could be more picturesque than this first view of Tanganyika Lake laying in the lap of the mountains, basking in the gorgeous tropical sunshine. He was on a cot with a spleen the size of a football, and that's what he saw. But, I mean, it was an emotional connection that he never would let go, and for the rest of his life, that body of water was a great source of pride for him. I mean, Tanganyika really, in his mind, was his lake, and the expedition that found it is his accomplishment. You know, the unfortunate part is that he barely saw it because he never left the shore of UGG for more than a couple of days. It didn't prevent him, however, from determining that Lake Tanganyika was the source of the Nile. And so when they got to UGG, it was a significant milestone. Nobody had ever done it, not any European. And so the problem is there's still a lot of work to be done. I mean, they were on the verge of solving one of history's greatest mysteries, but the journey now had to focus solely on proving that the Lake Tanganyika was the source of the Nile. Nothing else really mattered. That was what they were chartered to do. And so as Speke's sight kind of returned, Burton's disappeared. He also got paralysis, which set in, and he really, everybody thought he was going to die. And so finally on March 3rd, after receiving Burton's permission, Speke and a smaller group left on a dugout canoe to go check out the border of Lake Tanganyika looking for a river that's flowing out of the lake. And so it was 23 men, I think, they crammed into this little flimsy wooden canoe. They had an interpreter, a cook, a couple of guards, and then 18 paddlers. And they make off in what was pretty inclement weather. I mean, it rained on them. They didn't even get off the shore for the first few days. But by March 8th, they finally kind of reached the north shore where they expected this river to be. And they spent three more weeks looking for it. And I think they would have stayed out there and continued to look for it, except that one night, while Speke was sleeping, a beetle bored into his ear. And it started scratching and clawing its way down into his skull. And so nothing he tried could remove it. So finally the guy gets a knife and he kills the beetle with a knife. Unfortunately, it also punctured his eardrum, which soon became infected, swelled up his whole head and covered him with boils. And this is not funny, but you gotta appreciate this. The hole in his ear, it took 7 months for it to heal, and it caused him, obviously, temporary deafness, but on top of that, every time he sneezed, it made a whistling sound. And legs and wings and various other beetle parts would continue to leak out of that ear for over a year. So, needless to say, that excursion turned around. And when they got back, they found Burton wasn't completely healed, but he was feeling better, so he joined them, and on April 9th, they went back out for a second attempt. And, you know, they had to drag him to the canoe. He still, I mean, he was feeling better, but he couldn't walk on his own. So they took him out to the dugout, and what I can describe as their second attempt is probably the most miserable part of their whole venture, because it just rained on him every day. And then when he got out there on the lake, and this is a huge lake, his tongue started to swell up. He could barely drink or talk. The whole way along this shore where they're looking for the river, there's crocodiles. They're worried about mosquitoes and malaria. And so then you're debating about whether or not these cannibals are the ones that like to roast people and eat them or just eat them raw. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that they were trying to work out. And so ultimately, these villages along the coast were so fierce, even the Arab slave traders wouldn't pay a visit to them. And so finally, Burton and Speke, they're literally hours away now from finding this river coming out of Lake Tanganyika. And they stop to rest, and one of the sons of a local chieftain comes up to them and informs them that the river that they're looking for is in fact there. It's called the Ruzizi, but it doesn't flow out of Lake Tanganyika. It flows into Lake Tanganyika, which makes it impossible for Lake Tanganyika to be the source of the Nile. And so, you know, you'd think if you had walked halfway across Africa, dodging lions and hippos and army ants and malaria and blindness and all this stuff, that you just would have kept going another 5 or 6 hours up the shoreline to see it for yourself, wouldn't you? I mean, there's always a chance that the chieftain's sons were wrong or just lying to you on purpose. But Burton's famous reserve, and this guy was known for his grit, it had run dry. And so this guy who had boldly infiltrated the brothels of Karachi, this guy had, he had disguised himself as an Arab and made pilgrimage to Mecca and Medina, which if you get caught doing that is a death sentence. And he had done it and come back and written a book about it. And he had been held captive by a sultan in Harar for like 2 years. He didn't want any part of the Ruzizi. I mean, he was mentally, physically, and emotionally finished. Now, this isn't what he would tell the Royal Geographic Society when he got back to London, by the way. It's exactly what happened, but not what he said. The truth is, he quit. And Speke, on the other hand, wasn't ready to give up, but he wasn't in charge of the expedition, and so, you know, they head back to Tabora on their way home, and he realized when he got to Tabora that he might have one more chance to figure this thing out by investigating that other lake that he had been told about earlier. And so when they get to Tabora, he gets Burton's permission to go out for a few weeks, and what should have been a really delicate matter wasn't even a big deal. In truth, Burton was no longer interested in exploration. And at that point, he was just a man on the outside looking in. He'd just become a traveler, and he was just wanting to get home. And so he lets Speke go off on July 9th. And this guy, now he's still a little deaf and occasionally blind and maybe still covered with boils, I don't know. But he marched north from Tabora with a 34-man caravan for 3 weeks without stopping, day and night, looking for this lake. And the landscape, it was kind of dry and forested. The mornings and the nights were cool, even in the middle of the summer. And so now the daily peril that they faced is no different than it had been everywhere else in Africa. But for some reason now, he had this kind of lightheartedness. He was one of those guys that just liked to go it alone, I think. And so he continued further and further and further into the interior of Africa until on August 3rd, he discovered what he later named Lake Victoria Nyanza, the source of the Nile. And, you know, I read that story in the book, and there's so many great stories in this book, but what I thought was more interesting is that Dugard looks at all these explorers and he says they were not just successful on accident. They all had the same 7 common traits, and they all displayed them in exactly the same order. And this really is a pattern at work that's been followed for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. These 7 traits, according to Dugard, are more than just random characteristics shared by a bunch of, you know, tough people, that they're really the building blocks of well-being and success that are applicable to each and every one of us in our daily lives, and that they contain a potential for greatness that resides in all of us if we'll just follow them. And so here's what they are. This is what he said: curiosity, hope, passion, courage, independence, self-discipline, and perseverance. And so you guys are all here today, every last one of you, and you've decided to leave the shore of mediocrity behind and sail out on that horizon looking for something on the other side. You're all explorers. And you know, I know that many of you today are in that curiosity phase of your journey. You've heard about this place called financial freedom, and you've decided you're going to go out there and find out if it really exists. And others of you have moved from mere curiosity into the hope phase of your personal expedition here. You've turned your dream into a goal, and you've come up with a plan to make that goal a reality. And then after putting the muscle of hope into action, some of you have seen the results that inevitably flow from that, and you've moved on to the passion phase, where you will also learn the lesson that sometimes the result is a failure. And only after you can accept both success and failure with equal enthusiasm and understand that both are signs of progress will you move into the courage phase of your expedition. And listen, I've told you guys this a lot, many times. It is a brave, brave thing to throw yourself with reckless abandonment at a pursuit of a goal or a dream. It takes courage. And I think every time there's a great opportunity, risk is always hiding in the shadows. But ultimately, when you exercise your courage in the pursuit of a dream that will distinguish you from the mediocre mass, that's what you'll get. You'll get distinguished. And you'll find yourself, as a lot of people already have here, with this newfound feeling of power that you've never felt before, an independence that you've never experienced, and a phase that will quickly be replaced by the reality that no matter how powerful you are, there's a pace to success that requires continuous effort, and that self-discipline is what allows you to put forth consistent, persistent efforts, and that will ultimately move you into the last phase of your journey. You're all going to end up here. And it's the perseverance phase. Now, today, Mount Speke in Uganda, the Speke Gulf in Tanzania, and a small little deer called the Speke Gazelle all bear the name of John Hanning Speke. And of all the great explorers in the history of the British Empire, and you got Shackleton, Scott, Livingston, Parry, Hillary, only one of them has a monument on the hollow grounds of Kensington Garden. The Speke Monument is this towering obelisk of red Aberdeen granite. And there's an inscription on it that says, "In memory of Speke, Victoria Nyanza, and the Nile." And nothing and no place is named for Richard Francis Burton. Now, both of these guys entered the perseverance phase of their journey, but only one of them had what it takes to see it through to the end. Both of them put forth heroic efforts. I mean, they did what they had to do, they thought, to accomplish their dream. Both of them had made tremendous sacrifices for a period of time. Most of them suffered some horrific hardships. I mean, I can't even imagine. That whole beetle thing just is really, I think that's worse than a snake. But in the end, only one of them's remembered, and it's the man who didn't quit. It's the man who didn't quit. And listen, it may be that with the exception of a few deep sea trenches or some, you know, cave somewhere, that the earth has pretty much been physically explored. But what I know is that in our lives, we all have to move forward into the unknown every day. In this way, there's a connection between us and every one of those explorers of the past who's ever stepped outside of their comfort zone to challenge themselves to do something that somebody else told them was impossible to do. And it's that quest to conquer our fear and achieve our dreams that spans the centuries. I mean, I think it's the link between Christopher Columbus and Steve Jobs. I think that it's the root source of every smashing, breathtaking, life-changing success that happens. And it takes curiosity, it takes hope, it takes courage, it takes passion, it takes independence, it takes self-discipline, but above all, it takes perseverance. And I think the reward, if we do that, is that we create for ourselves a larger and a more interesting life full of more options and opportunities than we could ever hope or imagine. And I really believe that within each one of us beats the heart of an explorer. And like these explorers of the past, we face a daily barrage of adversity, complications, challenges. I mean, life's hard. This business is hard sometimes. Every day we have to decide if the thing we want most is worth the price we have to pay for it. It is. It is. Everything in your future is an unknown. And so we move forward every day attempting to chart a path that we think we're in charge of that'll take us where we want to go. You know, in his book, Labyrinths, Gernot Candelini said something, I love this quote, he said, on every path two crises awaits you. The first comes when the magic of the beginning has vanished. And the second comes just before the goal is reached, and they both ask the same question. Do you really want this? Do you really want this? Guys, every path ultimately is a path through the wilderness. Ambit's no different. And it's a path that whether you're in Ambit or not, you've got to follow whether you want to or not. You know, I mean, even when we don't know where it's going or if the prospect of getting totally lost is enormous, we have to keep going because sometimes, as every great explorer learns, and as our greatest teacher taught us, it's only by going through the wilderness that we find out who we truly are. And it's only by going there that we get the strength to get out again. I don't know where you're at personally in your Ambit expedition, but what I can tell you is this. Two crises await you. One is when the fun of the beginning is over, and the other one is right before you're going to get what you've been trying to get. And they're going to ask you the same question, and every day you need to ask yourself this question, do I really want this? Do you? Do you really want this? And may God bless you guys with more of everything you need to successfully complete your expedition to financial freedom. I hope He gives you all the curiosity and the hope and the passion and the courage and the independence and the self-discipline and especially the perseverance you need to see your journey through to the end. And most importantly, I hope you find Him waiting for you on the other side. God bless you guys.
Wise words and a great delivery of an absolutely inspirational address to our consultants. That, of course, was our Chief Marketing Officer and co-founder, Chris Chambliss, speaking at Ambition 2014. As always, please share this podcast with your team members and tell them where to find us. Want to listen to past episodes of the podcast? Well, just visit us at www.ambitsuccess.com. You'll find a complete archive of all podcasts there in the news section. Or find us in iTunes. Just open iTunes, click on the iTunes Store link at the top right of the page, and then enter Ambit Energy in the search box. You'll see an Ambit Energy podcast icon appear, along with a few episodes. Please take a moment and click that icon to review and rate us. It's that easy. I'm Wayne McMullen for Ambit Field Recognition, and you've been listening to the Ambit Energy Podcast. Work hard, dream big, and I'll see you soon.